This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Chapter Ali Imran from the Holy Quran, verses number 29 and 30, recited by Saeed Maliki.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Qul in تخفوا ما في صدوركم أو تبدوه يعلمه الله ويعلم ما في السماوات وما في الأرض والله على كل شيء قدير يوم تجد كل نفس ما عملت من خير محضرا وما عملت من سوء تود لو أن بينها وبينه أمدا بعيدا ويحذركم الله نفسه والله رؤوف بالعباد صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the merciful. Say, whether you hide what is in your heart or manifest it, Allah knows it, and He knows whatever is in the heavens and whatever is in the earth, and Allah has power over all things. On the day that every soul shall find present what it has done of good and what it has done of evil, it shall wish that between it and that evil there were a long duration of time. And Allah makes you to be cautious of retribution from Himself, and Allah is compassionate to the servants.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Thousands of people march in the southwestern Yemeni city of Taiz to denounce the French president's anti-Islam comments. Clashes break out between police and demonstrators protesting new coronavirus lockdown measures in Italy and Spain. At least four people are killed as a super typhoon barrels into southern Philippines, bringing intense rains to the region. Welcome to the program. Our top story, thousands of Yemenis have held a protest rally against French President Emmanuel Macron's anti-Islam stance. The demonstration was held in the southern city of Taiz. Protesters condemned Macron's Islamophobic remarks and policies. They called on all Muslims or Muslim nation status to unite and boycott French products. Macron outraged the Muslim world by defending the publication of insulting cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad under the pretext of freedom of expression. This came after a teacher was beheaded by one of his students for showing the blasphemous caricatures. Clashes break out between police and demonstrators protesting against draconian coronavirus restrictions in Barcelona, Spain. Violence erupted when protesters hurled objects at security forces who hit back with batons. They were protesting a 10 p.m. curfew and a ban on leaving the city for the weekend. Demonstrations were also held in the capital, Madrid, as well as several other cities. Despite the many restrictions imposed in Spain since July, officials have registered more than 1.1 million infections with 35,000 deaths. A similar protest was held in the Italian capital, Rome, where the government announced new measures, including closure of public places such as cinemas, theaters, and restaurants. A wave of protest against the government's anti-COVID-19 restrictions continues in Italy. Two more demonstrations have been held in Rome amid tensions between police and protesters.
More protests were held in the Italian capital on Saturday over the government's decision to impose tougher measures to contain the spread of the pandemic. Early in the afternoon, hundreds of far-right demonstrators staged a rally in Campo di Fiori against a new decree which has ordered the closure of gyms, cinemas and theatres, requiring cafes and restaurants to close their doors at 6 p.m. Clashes with police were recorded during the demonstration. Later on Saturday, another protest was held in Independence Square, not far from Rome's central train station, where thousands of protesters vented their anger at the latest anti-COVID-19 restrictions. This demonstration, dubbed You Close Us, You Pay, was called by a coalition of social movements and base unions.
Unfortunately, the government has done nothing to reduce the flow of travelers on local public transports, which have been turned into hotbeds of COVID-19 transmission. Furthermore, too many workers have not received any payroll subsidies from the government yet. How can they pay their bills and mortgage installments?
The government cannot close cafes and restaurants at 6 p.m. Owners can scrape by, maybe. But what about us workers? These restrictions are killing us.
From north to south, Italy's been hit by a wave of protests, some violent, following the introduction of more stringent coronavirus shutdown measures by the government. The country's interior ministry has warned that these demonstrations have been infiltrated by subversives who are trying to stir up trouble.
As the contagion curve continues to rise in Italy, Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte insists he doesn't want to enforce another lockdown, but many fear a new national quarantine is becoming inevitable.
So many people have already closed their activity after the first lockdown. Some managed to survive, but they won't survive a second lockdown.
The government is expected to present a decree including new restrictions as early as Monday. Targeted lockdowns and restrictions of movement between regions are among the new measures reportedly being discussed. Max Civili, Rome.
The United States has set a new worldwide record in confirmed COVID-19 cases in a single day, reporting over 100,000 new infections. The latest data indicates that the U.S. is now recording more than one new case every second. 31 states have also set records for increases in new infections. On Friday, more than a dozen U.S. states reported their highest one-day coronavirus cases, while 13 states were at record levels of hospitalized COVID-19 patients. Over 9.1 million Americans have so far been infected by the novel coronavirus. The disease has also claimed more than 230,000 lives in the country. Now, the UK has announced a national lockdown amid a second wave of coronavirus outbreak that threatens to strain the health service.
And so now is the time to take action because there is no alternative. And from Thursday until the start of December, you must stay at home. You may only leave home for specific reasons, including for education, for work. Let's say if you cannot work from home. For exercise and recreation outdoors with your household or on your own with one person from another household, for medical reasons, appointments, and to escape injury or harm, to shop for food and essentials, and to provide care for vulnerable people or as a volunteer. I'm afraid non-essential shops, leisure and entertainment venues...
Johnson added that all non-essential retail stores will close down, but there would be no need for citizens to stock up. The stringent measures come as the country's confirmed COVID-19 infections exceeded 1 million, with over 20,000 cases being reported daily. Tougher restrictions were also announced in several European countries, including Portugal and Austria. Greece is also on the verge of a partial lockdown. Meanwhile, France logged over 35,000 daily infections, raising its overall cases at over 1.3 million. Over 36,000 people have so far died from the disease in France. Europe accounts for half of the world's COVID-19 infections, with an average of over 240,000 cases per day. London correspondent Saeed Pourreza joined us earlier with more on Britain's nationwide lockdown.
Is we're going to look at this nationwide lockdown going to play in place on Thursday in 5 days' time, and we're looking at non-essential shops and businesses closing. For example, the hairdressers, those in the entertainment, the hospitality sector, pubs, they're going to have to shut down for the whole month. But schools, nurseries, colleges, and essential businesses will remain open for the next month. It is also important to mention that this is all happening as the so-called furlough scheme that supported people to companies rather to keep their employees in employment by covering two-thirds of their wages. That was supposed to end at the end of October, and now the government has said that it's extending it throughout November. But again, what is going to happen is these measures will have to be voted upon in Parliament.
Now, a suspect has been arrested after a Greek Orthodox priest was shot and seriously wounded in the French city of Lyon. Local authorities and prosecutors said the person's motives were not immediately clear. Police said they could not confirm whether the person was the assailant. A source with local prosecutors in Lyon said they have opened an investigation into the attempted murder. On Thursday, three people were killed in a knife attack in the city of Nice. French officials described the incident as a terrorist attack. Political commentator Shabir Hassan Ali says Macron's stance is part of the Islamophobia campaign that is aimed at demonizing Muslims.
This episode shows the extreme political immaturity of Macron. It shows that he has no real intelligence. He doesn't understand how politics works in the world. And he somehow thinks just pointing the finger at Muslims after he himself has insulted the sensitivities and the sanctities of more than 2 billion people across the world. If these people had any honor and any dignity, and if they really stood behind this idea of so-called freedom of expression and freedom of speech, there are other subjects that if I mention right now, I will be in a lot of trouble. People have gone to jail for mentioning these other subjects, but insulting the prophet of more than 2 million people, someone who was sent as a mercy to humanity, this is somehow considered very brave and very secular and very wonderful by this immature child. This is not something that is isolated. It's not something that's just come out of Charlie Hebdo or Macron. This is something that has been part of the industry of Islamophobia that has been rampant for many, many years now, that has been demonizing Muslims in a way that historically other communities were demonized, which ultimately led to atrocities the likes of which we can't even talk about. Terrorist attacks where people are harmed, people are killed, these have nothing to do with Islam. These have nothing to do with any religion.
A candlelight vigil in the U.S. city of Vancouver for a black man shot dead by police has turned ugly with rival protesters getting into a brawl. Unrest flared up as the mourners were paying tribute to Kevin Peterson Jr. The 21-year-old was killed in a city near Portland, Oregon, on Thursday night. Supporters of President Donald Trump, some of them carrying firearms, clashed with the mourning crowd. Windows were shattered and the U.S. flags were burned during the encounter. Some people in cars used pepper spray against each other. Federal agents in riot gear arrested at least seven people. The U.S. has been the scene of protests against racism and police brutality for several months now. The protests began after African-American George Floyd was killed by a white police officer in Minneapolis. Now, authorities in the Philippines warn of a possibly catastrophic condition as Super Typhoon Goni hits the region, forcing thousands to flee to safety. The state weather forecaster says Goni is the strongest typhoon of the year with a maximum wind speed of 225 kilometers per hour. It says several regions are going to experience destructive winds and torrential rainfall over the next 24 hours. The storm has so far killed four people, ripping off roofs, uprooting trees, as well as flooding villages and farmland. Officials say more than 316,000 people have fled their houses to safety so far. The airport in the capital, Manila, has been closed, and Coast Guard has ordered fishing boats and ferries to return to the port. On an average, 20 typhoons and storms hit the Philippines every year, causing damage to harvest, infrastructure, and homes. Now, Israelis have held fresh demonstrations against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem Al-Quds. Protesters gathered outside Netanyahu's residence to condemn his policies and call for his resignation. Scuffles broke out after several people were arrested. Demonstrations came despite a ban on protests. Israelis have been staging street rallies over the past months to protest the soaring unemployment, a hike in COVID-19 infections, and a return of coronavirus restrictions. Adding to anti-regime sentiments are the corruption charges facing the prime minister. Netanyahu went on trial in May for bribery, fraud, and breach of trust, but he denies any wrongdoing. Like any other time at this occasion, I'm going to bring in Mona Kandil. She's our correspondent in Ramallah, who's just about to join us to tell us about the latest protest. Mona.
Have been demonstrating for the 19th week in a row. Every Saturday night, thousands of Israelis took to the streets of Jerusalem and could send march toward the residence of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. This is what happened also last night. Thousands of Israelis marched in the streets of Jerusalem Al-Quds. Smaller demonstrations took place also in other areas in the occupied territories in 1948. These demonstrations mainly are calling for Netanyahu's resignation. It's over his corruption cases as well as for his handling of the coronavirus pandemic. At the same time, there are pressure on Netanyahu from the settler community that they are forcing him, according to the media this morning, to approve more settler units. Every time in the last week, we were witnessing that Netanyahu, following these demonstrations, was obeying the demands of the settler community and had approved tens of thousands of settler units across of the occupied West Bank in order to calm down the settlers and to tell, let's say, half of the Israelis who support them, that at the time there are calls for his resignation. There are other Israelis supporting Netanyahu, but at the same time, they are demanding to strengthen Israeli occupation across the occupied West Bank and Jerusalem Al-Quds. This is why media this morning were talking about Netanyahu's intention to approve more settler units across the occupied West Bank.
All right, thanks for that update. That's our correspondent, Mona Kandil, in Ramallah. Indian-controlled Kashmir is shut down to protest India's amendments and repeal of its decades-old land laws. The move has opened up Kashmir's land for sale to all Indian citizens. Shahanabad reports.
A shutdown is being observed in Indian-controlled Kashmir after New Delhi amended and repealed a series of decades-old land laws of Kashmir. The new reorganization law issued on October 26, 2020, opens up all of Jammu and Kashmir to every Indian citizen and removes every restriction that prevented large land holdings. Allows the Indian armed forces to take over land wherever they desire and gives sweeping powers to the government to take over any land and property for industrial use and bring in big businesses to set up their shops. People's Democratic Party President Mehbooba Mufti, while criticizing the government's move, accused India of land grab for big investors.
We can't sit silent on everything. If the government is so powerful, they should take back land from China, which they grabbed in Ladakh. Since they are not able to take it back from them, they will take our land. It is total lawlessness here.
The October 26, 2020 order repealed 13 state laws and amends 14 laws. Experts say this is to further the agenda behind the abrogation.
The aim is very much, yes, to disempower the Muslim majority of the state of J&K. And in fact, to erase them in history and in culture. I think that that is something that is not a big surprise. The question is how successful they're going to be at doing it. And it's something that only time will tell.
According to historic date check, these laws were introduced to empower the majority Muslims who were suffering immensely under the non-Muslim rulers. Not only this, but the rights to buy and sell land in Kashmir were also confined to the people of Kashmir. Experts say India's move in Kashmir since August 5, 2019 has further internationalized this conflict.
Kashmir is a small blip on the international scenario, but I think that it is gaining salience. And it is gaining an advantage. We are gaining an advantage out of it. Simply, and one of the biggest evidences of that is what happened with the Chinese so-called, but actual incursion into Jammu and Kashmir territory in Ladakh.
In response to the shutdown call by Pro-Freedom Camp of Kashmir, shops and businesses remained closed. Huge number of government forces were seen guarding the streets to avoid law and order problems. Almost seven decades ago, these laws were introduced to empower the Muslim majority of Kashmir. But today, when the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party is repealing and amending the same laws, the people of Kashmir are watching over helplessly. Experts say this move clearly depicts India's intentions in Kashmir. Shahana Butt, Indian administered Kashmir.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary. O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For thou art Allah, the best guardian, and thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to thee, addressing myself to thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to you for the hope of your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of thy creation, the summoner to thy truth. Exalt me with thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
Unity Week. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, Salam, and welcome to the fourth part of the special series on the Unity Week that spans the 12th till 17th of the Islamic month of Rabiul Awwal to mark the anniversary of the Messenger of Mercy, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Hope we will be true followers of him to meet him in paradise. Every year, during the Unity Week, ceremonies are held in Iran and other Islamic countries with the hope that true unity would one day materialize among various Islamic communities and nations. What can help Muslims more than anything else to achieve this goal is the practice and behavior of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The history of Islam is full of the examples which show the Prophet's role in preventing from disunity among Muslim ranks. The glory and might of every nation depends on their unity and solidarity. As the great personality of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, has been the fulcrum of people's emotions and the axis of the Islamic society, he has perpetuated the beautiful concept of unity in the world. The Prophet removed the obstacles of unity, such as racial discrimination, supremacy, ethnocentrism, and so on. Thus, very soon, he succeeded to familiarize the people of other lands with Islam. Therefore, he established the foundations of one of the greatest and lasting civilizations in the history of mankind on the basis of faith in the one God, peace and friendship. A cursory look at the history of early years of Islam reveals that the last divine messenger put into force practical ways of unity and made Muslims a united ummah in cultural, political, and social fields. Creation of amity, elimination of grudges from hearts, conclusion of fraternal bonds among nations,
encouragement of acquisition of knowledge, were the ways for creation of unity in the Islamic Ummah. But more important than these was to bring the people around the axis of monotheism, the Quran, and the Prophet himself. Muslims had heard this statement of the Prophet and tried not to forget it. The faithful are like a building in which a part reinforces the other part. O Muslims, do not be separate from each other. Do not turn your backs to each other. Do not be jealous of each other. Be brothers and united with each other. The migration of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, from Mecca to Medina was a turning point in the history of Islam. Upon the arrival of the Prophet in the city of Medina and settlement in the city, important developments took place in the Islamic society. The new religion had lofty programs to promote people culturally and ideologically. These programs needed coherent and systematic organization to be operational. Every tribe and group had their own customs, and there were a lot of difference among them. In such conditions, the Prophet raised the principle that Muslims are brothers of each other. This had a great and deep impact on the society of those days. He said, "Congregation is mercy, and discord is punishment." After concluding a pact, he would tell different tribes to appoint representatives among themselves to supervise the implementation of the pact. Once the Prophet told one of his companions, "O Abu Ayyub, would you like me to inform you of a charity that God and his Prophet like?" He said, "Yes, Messenger of God." The Prophet continued, "Reconciliation and making peace between people and trying to reform among them." He also said, "The reward of the one who tries to reconcile among people is equal to the one who struggles in the way of God." It has been narrated that the Prophet of Islam ordered to destroy a mosque that had been built with the aim of forging rift and hostility among Muslims. This shows that even a mosque, which is apparently for the purpose of promotion and propagation of Islam, can turn into a center of causing discord and enmity among Muslims. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, in his last will, warned Muslims with the words, "O people, listen to my words. Your blood and property are haram, or religiously forbidden for each other. Know that every Muslim is the brother of another Muslim." Observance of justice was one of the effective mechanisms of the Prophet for bolstering unity among Muslims. He united Muslims and obliterated irrational discriminations of the Age of Ignorance, that is, the era before the emergence of Islam. In view of this, he appointed the Arab Zayd ibn Haritha as the commander of the troops and the black Bilal Habashi as his special muazzin or caller to prayer. Furthermore, he glorified and respected the Iranian Salman Farsi and the Roman Sohaib. He strongly fought incorrect social privileges and replaced them with new values. What a pity that 14 centuries after his enlightening teachings, there are still people, especially among the leaders of Islamic countries, who, in words and deeds, are far distant from the Prophet, as they consider their race and nation superior to other Islamic nations. This is in stark contrast with the teachings of the Prophet and has been vehemently forbidden in the Noble Quran. The Prophet used to say that there is no difference between Arabs and non-Arabs, or white and black. The Noble Quran too highly stresses that the only factor for supremacy and nobility is taqwa, or God-weariness and piety.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The United States 2020 presidential election is set to take place in just a few days. Former Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic Party nominee, faces off against the incumbent Republican President Donald Trump. Is this a real election? Are voters being offered anything substantive? Let's find out. I'm Richard Medhurst in the communique. Americans are just about to go to the polls and choose their new leader. Out of a population of 320 million, it's all come down to Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. Yes, unfortunately, this is the best that the country can muster. Now, when comparing Donald Trump to Joe Biden, there's a lot to unpack here. Joe Biden has served in government for around 40 years. He was the head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, senator for Delaware, and served under Barack Obama as vice president. Donald Trump, on the other hand, doesn't have that long of a record in public service. However, he is the incumbent president. We have 4 years of his tenure to go off of, and he's seeking re-election. Let's start out with their domestic policy. While Joe Biden tries to market himself as middle-class Joe and a friend of the working class, his record says otherwise. He tried multiple times during his tenure in Congress to cut Social Security.
When I argued that we should freeze federal spending, I meant Social Security as well. I meant Medicare and Medicaid. I meant veterans benefits. I meant every single solitary thing in the government. And I not only tried it once, I tried it twice, I tried it a third time, and I tried it a fourth time.
He bragged at one point about working with segregationists. Joe Biden was also an architect of the 1994 crime bill. He pushed the war on drugs, which devastated black and brown communities disproportionately all over America.
We passed a law through the leadership of Senator Thurmond and myself and others, a law that says, you're caught with that, you go to jail for 5 years. You get no probation, you get nothing other than 5 years in jail. Judge doesn't have a choice.
Joe Biden's entire career has been spent catering to the fossil fuel industry, to the credit card industry, to the big banks. Remember that he was very supportive of Barack Obama's bailout for Wall Street to the tunes of billions of dollars. Meanwhile, Americans were kicked out of their homes by the millions. Joe Biden was equally a chief architect of the bankruptcy bill in 2005, which left millions of Americans without any protections just as a recession was about to hit, and made sure that students would be lumped with student debt for the rest of their lives. And all of this at the behest of the financial sector, the insurance companies, the credit card companies, the banks. Now, when it comes to Donald Trump, one of the first things that he tried to do once he got into office was repeal the Affordable Care Act and throw millions off of their health care. And then, of course, he gave huge, enormous tax cuts to the rich. Trump completely botched and fumbled the response to COVID-19. Remember, the United States has only 4% of the world's population, yet the highest number of coronavirus cases. Over 200,000 people lost their lives. How does the richest country on earth do such a thing? All of this under his watch, not to mention the corruption by his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, flying in medical equipment from China and selling it off to the highest bidder, even if they're outside the U.S., leaving doctors and nurses without PPE, without the equipment necessary to do their jobs, having to come to work dressed in trash bags. This is corruption pure and simple. And that's the thing. Both of these candidates are corrupt to the core. You could not find worse people to run a country. Moreover, Donald Trump was impeached by the House for obstruction of Congress and abuse of power. Now, given the fact that all U.S. presidents abuse their power and obstruct justice and are corrupt to their cores, that's saying something. Now, internationally speaking, when it comes to foreign policy, what did Joe Biden do? Joe Biden was a staunch supporter of the Iraq War. As a matter of fact, he was an architect of the Iraq War. He was head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He chose all 18 witnesses that would testify in regards to the invasion of Iraq. He gave George Bush all the support that he needed to invade Iraq. And then when he was vice president under Obama's tenure, they ramped it up from 2 wars in Afghanistan and Iraq to 7 wars. When it comes to mass surveillance, this was also handed over by Bush and expanded massively under Obama and Biden's watch. Joe Biden himself and John Kerry were calling up the foreign ministries all over Europe and threatening them not to accept Edward Snowden's asylum request. They canceled his passport on purpose while he was in Russia to make sure that they could smear him as working for the Russian government, even though this is not true. Now, when it comes to Donald Trump, his foreign policy has been to completely undermine international organizations. He pulled out of the World Health Organization. He pulled out of the Paris Climate Accords. He pulled out of the UN Human Rights Council. He went and pulled out of the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. And then afterwards, he went and assassinated Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani, and Abu Mahdi Mohandes. And then he went and bombed Syria in April 2018 over false pretenses, an alleged gas attack in Douma that never took place. And the OPCW tried to cover this up. The Donald Trump administration also sanctioned the International Criminal Court to try and block their investigation of war crimes in Afghanistan. They went ahead and put these brutal Caesar Act sanctions on Syria that have caused its currency to go into free fall and its economy to collapse. Brutal sanctions on Iran, brutal sanctions on Venezuela trying to steal its gold, trying to enact a coup with Silvercorps, this mercenary group that was sent into Venezuela a few months ago. The coup against Bolivia that ousted Evo Morales and forced him into exile, which was orchestrated by the Organization of American States based in Washington, D.C. And of course, we can't forget the Trump administration's persecution of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, posing the gravest threat to press freedoms worldwide. And of course, when it comes to occupied Palestine, both Joe Biden and Donald Trump have participated, aided, and abetted the oppression and the genocide that is being committed against the Palestinian people by providing the Zionist occupation with billions of dollars in military aid, and Trump even going so far as to recognize Jerusalem as its capital and the occupied Syrian Golan Heights.
I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist.
Due to the coronavirus pandemic, early voting and voting by mail has been encouraged a lot. As a matter of fact, a record-breaking amount of Americans have already cast their ballots in the election, either by voting early or through mail-in ballots. Now, while voter turnout seems impressive, what we've seen online are countless videos of voters waiting for hours on end in enormous queues just to cast their vote. Is that the sign of a healthy democracy? That's a sign of voter suppression. In a healthy, functioning democracy, you're not supposed to take an entire day just to vote and participate in that democracy. That is actually a very concerning sign, despite what rich white liberals try to say, that this is some mark of resilience, that, oh, look, people are so dedicated to ousting Donald Trump and getting Joe Biden into office that they're willing to wait all day. They shouldn't have to, if America is really a democracy, as we keep on hearing. Why is it particularly the case with voters of color in black and brown communities? People have to wait substantially longer to be able to cast their votes. Why is that the case? Why are less resources invested in those communities? Fewer polling stations, fewer volunteers and personnel. Why are there fewer voting machines? You can't be a democracy when you leave out people of color and prevent them from participating in the elections, in the democratic process. That is voter suppression, pure and simple. Not to mention, we have countless examples of hundreds of polling stations being closed down in Georgia, in Texas, and in a number of other states, preventing people from being able to vote. They might have to work. They might have to drive another hour just to get to a polling station, making it completely inconvenient for anyone who is even contemplating to participate in this democracy. We've had hundreds of thousands of people purged from the voter rolls, the vast majority of them people of color. What does that indicate? What does that say about this country and its so-called democracy? You know, if the United States took all this manpower, took all the resources that it invests in bombing other countries, in colonizing other countries, in occupying other countries, and invested those same resources and manpower and energy and time into its own country, into its own elections, I think it would fare much better. To explore this topic further, I spoke earlier with journalist and political activist Fiorella Isabella. How would you describe the current state of affairs regarding election integrity? Would you describe the election process as fair in the United States?
I'm laughing, Richard, because it's anything but fair. It's a joke. It's a sham. It's absolutely disastrous. And it is a bipartisan practice, meaning both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party cheat. In 2016, they rigged the elections against Bernie Sanders the first time. 2020, we got to follow it up. We literally interviewed poll workers before the election here, and they were telling us the machines were faulty. They were telling us that the training they got was a day's worth of training. The manuals were out of date. The voter rolls were out of date. They also found out, we also found out, that these machines have actual access to the internet, and they also have access to SIM cards. So anybody could hack that if you have the code. And we interviewed several election integrity activists and election integrity specialists that showed us exactly how easy it is if you write a code to change those numbers on these machines, because they are all owned by proprietary software, meaning they are private corporations that you know nothing about. So no, the state of our elections is entirely corrupt. And what's happening, unfortunately, right now is that it's still taboo to talk about election issues, right? Like, they still, if you talk about election fraud or say that something is rigged, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. Oh, you must be working for Putin. They love to say that Russia interferes in our elections, that some foreign agent interferes right in our elections, but they can't for one second even begin to think that we couldn't be interfering in our own elections.
Would you agree that voter suppression is rampant and that it specifically affects voters of color?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and this is, again, it's a bipartisan practice, because in the primaries, the Democrats tend to do that to the people of color. So, for instance, the night before it was the official election day primary, we went to a voting center where it was full of Latino people. It was in East LA. It was full of young people, Latino people, and people of color in general. So the people operating this polling center were giving out provisional ballots. Provisional ballots are this type of pink ballot that needs to be verified multiple times in order to even be counted, and it may never be counted. In fact, most of the time, it's not counted, and it's called a placebo ballot for a lot of people, and that was coined by Greg Palast because it's a fake ballot. Like, it's not the same thing as a real ballot. And so they were giving these ballots to people because the machines weren't working. So instead of saying, you know what, you should go somewhere else, or we could find a way to give you an actual ballot, they just started telling people, this is the same thing, it doesn't matter. And it's not. And so when we started going into the offices and looking at the names that were in these pink ballots, it was all foreign names, all the vast majority Latino names, which of course the Latinos heavily favored the more progressive candidate because of his immigration policy. So that it was just like obvious. And then college campuses where college students go, oh, you got three machines for a college campus of like thousands of people. I mean, that's in California. That's like Democratic supermajority California that this happened. So imagine what happens when Republicans also do the same thing in states like Florida, when they gerrymander and when they're like, no, you have to bring this and put people off the voter rolls. It's a bipartisan practice.
Many progressives who supported Bernie Sanders' campaign have suddenly switched to supporting Joe Biden. They do this in two ways. One, by pushing this narrative, this myth about the lesser of two evils, and simultaneously, by whitewashing Joe Biden's record. This is insulting to everybody who has suffered because of Joe Biden's policies domestically, because of the crime bill, because of mass incarceration, to everybody who suffered because of his war hawk foreign policy, the destruction of Iraq, the millions of people killed and displaced. This is an insult to all of us. You know, we keep hearing this idea of the lesser of two evils, that Joe Biden is somehow the lesser of two evils. To whom? To whom exactly is he the lesser of two evils? To white crypto neoliberals? To black people in America? To people of color in America? He's not the lesser of two evils. He jailed them en masse. To people in the Middle East, to Arabs, to people in Iran, to people all over the global south. This concept does not exist. We are still going to keep getting bombed. We're going to keep getting sanctioned. We're going to keep being killed. We're going to keep being oppressed and colonized, no matter who takes office. And yet we keep hearing this myth about the lesser of two evils. That is such a privileged thing to say that could only emanate from upper middle class white liberals in the United States. To further explore this topic, I spoke earlier with Nico House, broadcast journalist and campaign surrogate for Tulsi Gabbard. We all know that Donald Trump is a racist. He's a loudmouth. Tell me about Joe Biden's record, about his criminal justice, about working with segregationists, about writing the 94 crime bill.
Well, we all should know that Joe Biden is a racist and is also kind of a loudmouth as well. Like, he argued on the Senate floor that he didn't want his kids to go to grow up in a racial jungle, trying to protect segregation on behalf of Republican segregationists. The 94 crime bill is, in my opinion, far more damaging than the average person could possibly know. You can read that bill and tell this was specifically geared to put black people in jail and to basically to auction black lives out to the highest bidder via the private prison system, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, if you learn your history about that situation, it's super weird how it's in lockstep with the corruption of the DEA and the ATF. And there were lawsuits regarding that. And then, of course, Clinton fired all the U.S. attorney generals who weren't loyal to him and all the federal judges that weren't loyal to him and put his own people into the point where we didn't get them out until Trump took over. And so if you actually look at it, it looks like it was a coordinated effort, because it was. As far as Trump is concerned, this is the main difference, in my opinion, between Trump and Joe Biden. People say that those who are okay with another 4 years of Donald Trump are accelerationists, but it's actually the opposite. It's those who are okay with another 4 years of neoliberal Bidenism that is going to end up becoming accelerationists in foreign policy, domestic policy, et cetera, corruption in general, because we just saw how the New York Post was, their article about Hunter Biden was just banned before they even had a chance to confirm or deny anything. It was banned. So basically what I'm being told is that I'm allowed to fight one type of fascism, the neo-fascism, but I am not allowed to fight or critique the civility fascist that is Joe Biden.
You know, me as a Syrian, as an Arab, I know that this concept of lesser of two evils is complete nonsense. You know, no matter who gets elected, they're going to keep bombing us, they're going to keep killing us, they're going to keep sanctioning us. So, I mean, you as a black man in America, how do you feel about this myth of lesser of two evils?
You know, they don't keep bombing us, but they do keep, you know, shooting us without accountability. Look at what happened with Breonna Taylor. They don't sanction us like they do maybe Syria, but it is very similar. The banks are still racist. The last case of redlining happened in 2015. This is a Jim Crow policy in 2015. So that's still happening. Ice Cube can't even say that both sides of the establishment are screwing over black Americans. Joe Biden and Donald Trump are equally as bad. The Democratic and Republican parties are equally as bad for us. And we cannot give our vote to anyone anymore without getting something in return. And that is what they were really upset about, is that Ice Cube was doing what a lot of us independent-minded black Americans are doing, which is demanding something for our vote for once in the last 50 to 60 years.
You know, I want to ask you also about Bernie Sanders, about AOC, about the Squad. They all ran on these progressive policies, Medicare for All, Green New Deal, and yet they're telling people to vote for Joe Biden now. What does that say about them? Do you feel that they've been putting their party first, party over policy?
And it's funny because I said yesterday when I saw AOC's comments that she's not just voting for Joe Biden, but she's proudly voting for him. You can't lose my respect. And saying that you're proudly voting for a segregationist, that you're proudly voting for a sex pest, that you are proudly voting for a man who passed the 94 crime bill, obviously was one of the senators that led the way on the Telecommunications Act of 1996, the same man who authored the Patriot Act and brags about how the Patriot Act was his idea, which, by the way, had to work with Kavanaugh to get all the illegal stuff basically circumvented. Like, he went to Kavanaugh to get that squared away, in case anybody was curious. The same man who was anti-LGBTQ until it was convenient for him. The same man who fired the prosecutor in the Ukraine because the prosecutor, or got the prosecutor fired, threatened to hold $1 billion from the Ukrainian government if they did not fire that prosecutor, because that prosecutor was going to investigate Hunter Biden and his influence on Burisma. And then, of course, has just vehemently denied that. I mean, look at all the information that's coming out with Joe Biden. You can proudly vote for him. Or in Bernie's case, oh, not only is he proudly voting for him, but that's his friend. Which, by the way, I hate to say this, but I feel like it should be said. There had to be some very, very latent truth about Hillary's grievances against Bernie as far as saying that he is at least a little sexist in his approach. And unfortunately, the progressive movement has also proven to be the same, because the amount of anger and animosity that I see and I saw, even from Bernie, when he endorsed Hillary, he didn't like her. It was very clear he didn't like her. But with Biden, it's my friend. He was, in the beginning, before Biden started, you know, just trashing him and socialism, he was even enthusiastic about his support for Biden, which we can't really say about his support for Hillary. And you do gotta wonder, what's the difference? Their corruption levels are about the same, except for, I would say that Biden's level of corruption is almost more explicit to a certain degree, or in all the qualities and characteristics that Bernie always assigns to Trump are even more so true, not only in rhetoric, but in policy when it comes to Biden. So what's the difference there? And the only difference that you could think of is really Hillary Clinton's woman.
You look at also the Obama years, when Joe Biden was vice president, you had the Black Lives Matter movement starting out and Occupy Wall Street starting out. So how do we reconcile that? Like, how are we supposed to believe that if Joe Biden is elected, everything is going to somehow magically become better?
Like I said earlier, man, I think the fusion centers, like I was talking about, that's when the local government and police departments work with the NSA and the CIA to target and track activists. Like, a gross overstep of civil liberties. And this is what we're seeing, or what we saw under Obama. The only difference between then and now is that the protests seem to be more widespread. People seem to be more open to the realities of what fascism looks like. And they're willing to challenge it, because fascism finally has that ugly caricature of a face that is Donald Trump. But under Biden, Celebrities have been tweeting it out, bro. They've been saying they're ready to stop having to tweet about politics and stop having to pay attention to politics every day. They've been saying. So we know what's going to happen. And while, meanwhile, people like myself and the black community, people like you and your relatives and your friends are going to have to just watch bombs drop again in silence.
They're pushing a candidate who does not even support their policies. He does not support universal health care. He does not support a Green New Deal. He does not support any of the progressive platform that Bernie Sanders ran on. Joe Biden is a candidate who cannot even speak properly, who has visible and very concerning signs of cognitive decline.
What kind of country are we going to be? Four more years of George, going to find ourselves in a position where if Trump gets elected, we're going to be in a different world.
This shows you how corrupt the Democratic Party is, that they're willing to put forward someone like Joe Biden, who is a right-winger through and through, who cannot even speak properly anymore. And it also shows you how pathetic the progressive wing of the Democratic Party is as well, if they're just willing to roll over and get behind a candidate like Joe Biden. They have become so brazen with this that they're not even trying to hide it anymore. Remember, at the Democratic National Convention, they even invited Colin Powell to speak. Yes, the same Colin Powell who lied to the UN Security Council about weapons of mass destruction that did not exist in Iraq. This attempt to rehabilitate neoconservatives from the Bush era, the fact that Democrats are trying to court George Bush's endorsement, that you have the Lincoln Project, Dick Cheney's daughter, Bill Kristol, Rick Wilson, all getting together to support Joe Biden, this band of disgusting war criminals and neocons speaks volumes. It tells you everything you need to know. There's no such thing as the lesser of two evils. They are the same evil. No matter who you elect, you are going to end up with the same result. And this is a reality that a lot of people just don't want to face. They need to buy into this myth that their elections matter, that America is exceptional, that they have a real democracy, despite all of the evidence to the contrary. United States elections are a farce.